Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we're going to check in with the National Office of the Disabled American Veterans on their legislative and advocacy efforts in Washington, D.C. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Sean Mankey.
More than 13,000 men and women serve in the Minnesota National Guard, but of that number, only about 2,000 serve full-time, leaving the remaining 11,000 in need of civilian employers. We'd like to recognize all the great companies who employ our soldiers and airmen. Your support, sacrifice, and accommodation to our National Guard mission and training schedules has not gone unnoticed. Employer support allows our service members to remain focused on our important missions without worrying about how they will support themselves when they return home. On behalf of the Minnesota National Guard, I want to thank all of our military employers for their support, especially those who participate in our Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Initiative.
Thank you, General Mankey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. So I said at the opening, we had a special show today where we're going to talk to the National Office of the Disabled American Veterans on some legislative and advocacy efforts. And joining us here today in the studio is our co-host, who is the National Commander, Butch Whitehead.
Hey,
Commander,
Tom,
welcome back.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me back today.
Whenever we see you, Commander, we have to figure out, let's see now, you used to be the adjutant of the Minnesota Disabled American Veterans, and of course you were in the Minnesota Army National Guard, and you're still doing that, but today you're wearing the hat of the National Commander for the second year in a row.
I am. You know, it's one of those things that each morning I wake up, got to figure out which hat I'm going to put on today, but I find myself having to carry all three hats, you know, every day because it seems to be never changing.
And you got into this a while back, but the pandemic came through. And you couldn't hold the national convention, so has it ever happened before the national commander had to go twice?
It has, Tom. This is the second time ever that's happened here, that the DAV's had a commander serve two terms. And while it's sad that we're dealing with this pandemic, I couldn't be happier to continue to serve as the commander for a great organization in the work we do helping veterans for a second term.
And you got to serve at a special time where the national DAV is 100 years old.
It is. It was a great honor to be part of that celebration of our celebrating 100 years. Celebrating the 99th, I was excited about that, going into 100 years, and here I get to be part of the 100 years as well.
And we've got a lot to talk about today about health care and specifically the effects of COVID on veterans' health care, toxic exposure, burn pits, women and minority veterans, and veterans' mental health and suicide. But joining us now is one of your associates from National Office, Joy Elam, who is the National Legislative Director. Joy, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks for having me. Thank you.
Commander, can you tell us what role does Joy fill in the National Office?
Which roles doesn't she fill? You know, one thing with our team, we all wear several hats, and Joy right now being the National Legislative Director, she's also very involved with women veterans and stuff like that, but she's overseeing a lot of great things going on out there in D.C.
Well, Joy, I know we talked to you last year on that show. I'm glad to have you back, but the big issue this year and all of 2020 was the coronavirus pandemic. Can you tell us what impact COVID-19 and the pandemic had on the VA and veterans and their ability to have access to care at the VA?
Sure. Thank you. Yes, COVID, as soon as we got word about COVID, I think last March, our world's all turned upside down, and definitely the healthcare systems, either throughout the United States and the VA, were all impacted. And we saw an immediate switch, you know, both in the private sector but in VA, to telehealth. So they definitely wanted people to isolate, stay home, stay safe, and tried to do a number of things, ramping up telehealth and getting the equipment out that a number of veterans needed so that they could stay home. They were also dealing with some of the emergent needs of elderly veterans who are in our state veterans' homes. And they really focused on making sure that veterans would be able to continue to get their care. So approving medications for enrolled veterans, making sure they had those medications that could be mailed to them and that they had mental health services to try to continue those. They knew this was going to be, you know, a difficult time for people just being cut off basically from, you know, a lot of their access to health care, but VA did remain open and did the emergency cases, and of course, then they started seeing COVID patients.
We're talking today about DAV resources across the United States on in Washington, D.C., on Minnesota Military Radio. And Joy, I know that because of the pandemic, the local VA facilities were highly restricted, but it seems like they're starting to try to get open again. Is that the same across the country?
Yes, VA is definitely open for business while they're still encouraging. If you can do telehealth visit, they want you to do that just to keep the traffic down in the facilities and keep everyone safe. But they do, they have started their vaccination program, and they're really ramping up. Obviously, VA being so extensive throughout the United States, very large system, lots of capability, and they want to, I mean, their goal is to try and get all their enrolled veterans vaccinated as soon as possible. They want to make sure, you know, so many veterans are service connected, so many of DAV's members, you know, have a lot of co-occurring issues, health issues that really put them at high risk. And overall, in the VA healthcare system, you see veterans that are, you know, above the average risk. So they know how important it is to make sure veterans can get in, get those vaccinations. So I think, you know, VA is really poised to be a leader. We just got word actually this afternoon that VA was going to be provided an additional 200,000 doses next week above their normal 125,000 doses. So they wanted to make sure that they put those to good use. They've got the, you know, equipment, supplies, and people to do it. And I even heard that they were going to do a mass vaccination clinic on Monday, on President's Day, in one location. And hopefully, you know, if the supply is available, other facilities will do the same.
Commander, I think our veterans are getting tired of the pandemic and they're tired of staying at home. But the vaccines are coming now and they're being delivered. You don't want to be the last person to get the COVID.
Absolutely. You know, one thing I got to quick, I know we're running out of time here, Tom, but one thing I got to give a good shout out to the DAV is our transportation program and the work that we're doing because of the transportation program DAV has. We're getting these veterans to the clinics and to the VA so they can get their vaccines. So a huge shout out to the DAV and our transportation program that we're doing all across the country.
And Joy, I want to come back to you. I go to the Minneapolis VA and I use my health eVet, and we've used team meetings and all kinds of things to stay in touch with my healthcare professionals. Do you see some of that becoming a permanent change in the way our veterans are going to do business with the VA in the future?
Well, the one positive thing about COVID is it really has tested the systems and what capabilities are available due to the technology. So I think that we will see maybe, you know, the country will change in terms of convenience to people. You know, there's still things we need to go in for, x-rays, blood work, and other things. But if a visit can be done from home and done and meet your needs, I think a lot of people, you know, will feel that's okay. So the future, you know, we will be looking to see what the long-term impact is on the healthcare system and the ability, new things that have come out just due to COVID. So I think that's important.
Commander, I think like last year, we traveled to Washington, D.C. and did a couple shows out there, one from the National DAV offices. Well, here we are today. You're at my office, and your team's out in Washington, D.C., and our engineers back at the studio, and we're able to pull it together. Technology is changing things.
Technology is changing, and unfortunately, people are being forced to use the technology now, and it's definitely testing the systems, testing the people individually, but it's definitely, we're seeing improvements across the board, and I think we'll continue to see improvements of people being more comfortable using the technology that's available.
Joy, I'd like to thank you for joining us today. We have to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some presumptives, toxic exposure, burn pits, and so forth with my co-host, our national commander, Butch Whitehead, and his team from Washington, D.C. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we've been visiting with the National Office of the Disabled American Veterans, and my co-host is the National Commander, Butch Whitehead. And Butch, we got through some stuff on that first segment, and we've got another one of your Deputy National Legislative Director from Washington, D.C. is joining us, is Shane Learman, and he was a Marine.
He was a Marine, and hey, Tom, one thing that's not on there, he actually did work out of the NSO office here in Minnesota, so he can speak good Minnesota language as well.
Saw that. He was at the National Service Offices in Fort Snelling. Shane, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. Glad to be back.
Shane, we know that Congress has been in session. We've got a change in the administration out there. We got a new president. We got some new senators, new congressmen, and when they're not dealing with or being distracted by other things, they recently, I think it was last year, added some presumptives to the diseases that are covered under Agent Orange. Could you tell us about that, please?
Oh, absolutely, Tom. As part of the National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2021, three new diseases for Agent Orange were added, and that includes bladder cancer, hypothyroidism, and Parkinsonism, or Parkinson's-like syndromes. They had been pending for 4 years to be added. Since VA didn't add them, Congress got them added into the National Defense Authorization Act.
And Shane, I'm curious, there was a fourth one that was in with that group, and it was kind of dropped at the last minute. What happened to that?
Hypertension was made as a recommendation by the National Academies of Science in their report in 2018. And hypertension was previously recommended, and that is one of the disabilities that VA has consistently looked and conducted their own studies to determine if it's related. So even though it wasn't added in the National Defense Authorization Act, DAV is committed to continue to push to get hypertension as one of the presumptive diseases for Agent Orange.
So that one's still on your to-do list. But Shane, for our veterans, our Vietnam veterans, my fellow Vietnam veterans, that may have had problems with bladder cancer, hypothyroidism, and Parkinson's disease, what do they need to do to start some claims and get some help?
Well, if they haven't established a claim yet, they should, for either of those three conditions is related to Agent Orange exposure. VA has not formally come out and added any new rules or actually made any comments yet since they have been added by law. But we're encouraging everybody to file those claims now. They can either contact the VA directly or they can contact a veteran service organization like DAV, one of our service offices, and get that claim established as soon as possible.
Very good. And Commander, I got a wild question for you here.
Oh.
We've been watching these efforts to add these diseases out there, and Congress gets in and they look at it. I'm hoping they're looking at the science that says Agent Orange caused this. But on some of these things that haven't been added, are there budgetary concerns that slow that down?
Well, it's always a concern of ours if that's really what's stopping some of these things to be added and all that. They have never come out and used that as a reason why. But when you start looking at some of the things, it is definitely a concern that we keep bringing up that that should not be the reason it's not being added.
And meanwhile, the Vietnam veterans are suffering and dying and not being helped. So I know this is critical on your list, and you've been battling it for a couple of years. And I know Shane has too. Shane, are there other diseases we're trying to get covered there?
There's one more disease related to Agent Orange specifically that was mentioned. It's called monoclonal gammopathy of unspecified significance. The National Academies report linked that to Agent Orange exposure as well. And it is a protein abnormality found in blood of Vietnam veterans that is also contained in the bone marrow. That's another disease we're fighting for along with the hypertension.
Shane, that was impressive. I couldn't have said that if I tried five times. Good work.
And for a Marine.
And for a Marine. I wasn't going to say that, but Commander, we got to move forward from 50 years ago in Vietnam. And these days, the last 25 years, burn pits is a big issue. And your generation are having trouble with that, just like we had problems with Agent Orange.
And exactly. You know, one thing that DAV, as well as other veterans organizations, is the burn pits is this generation's Agent Orange, and we cannot allow today's serving veterans to fight as long as the Vietnam veterans have been to get this work done. I know the DAV and Shane will go into that next, but we're making some good progress on that. And last year to get a bill actually introduced was a huge step for us.
Shane, it took a long time to get to these Agent Orange related diseases. Do you feel like it's going to go quicker with the burn pits and things because we've already been through this with Congress, and it's taken a long time. The next one, I hope it doesn't take our veterans from your generation as long as it took us. It's been over 50 years since I left Vietnam. Do you think it's going to go quicker, Shane?
I'm hopeful that it will, Tom, but unfortunately, based on where they're at with the science, I don't think it will. And part of the problem is there were some recent studies done by the National Academy of Sciences studying the effects of airborne hazards in burn pits, specifically respiratory. And their conclusion was there wasn't enough data, or there was insufficient evidence for them to come to a conclusion. Well, burn pits have been used during the first Persian Gulf and OAF post 9/11. So they still don't have anything, and some of those things have been going on for 20 or 30 years now. So that is a concern. But what DAV has been pushing over the last 2 or 3 years, and as the commander noted, was introduced last Congress. It's a concept called concession of exposure, not a presumptive, but what it would do, it would allow a veteran to get a disability related to burn pit exposure on a direct service-connected basis by getting VA to concede specifically the toxins they were exposed to, as they've already recognized, to remove some of those barriers just to make it easier for us to get direct service connection for those conditions now without having to wait for more studies and additional science and wait another 5, 10, 20 years.
Shane, sounds like an acknowledgement of exposure and maybe a workaround to speed things up so that our veterans that need help can get help sooner. We're speaking with a staff from the National DAV office today about their legislative and advocacy efforts on Minnesota Military Radio. And Commander, I know that there's another topic here, Uzbekistan. And apparently there was a base over there known as K2. I'm not going to say the name of it because I can't do as well as Shane did. But did we have some problems there, maybe for you or Shane?
Shane, if you want to take one, yeah. Shane's been working really hard on that as well. So, Shane?
Thanks, guys. Karshi Kanabad was an air base in Uzbekistan. It was a former Soviet air base. They formally call it K2. And the U.S. established Camp Stronghold Freedom there to support combat missions from 2001 and 2005. However, what they have discovered is that base was contaminated by the Soviets, which included chemical weapons, enriched uranium, soil saturated with fuels and other solvents, which actually formed a black goo. And numerous tests have been done showing all of the contamination in that area. And in 2015, the U.S. Army had a study that showed veterans exposed at K2 have a 500% increased likelihood of developing cancer due to their exposures at K2.
Wow. Shane, we just got a couple of minutes left. What other toxic exposure issues are you and the DAV advocating in front of the upcoming Congress? And are you hopeful with the new administration that they're going to be responsive?
I believe so, Tom. I think with the new administration, we're going to be able to make a lot of ground within the VA. And also, I'm feeling very optimistic about some of these issues that will be pending in this upcoming Congress, the 117th as well. Some of the other issues that we're fighting for, we're taking a look at all of the toxic exposures at Fort McClellan. We're looking to get Thailand included into the statute as an area that was exposed to Agent Orange during the Vietnam era. We're also looking at PFAS, which is a water contamination that has been found at over 600 military installations. And we're also looking at the Camp Lejeune water contamination. Again, there's some things that we believe need to be changed to that as well.
So, Shane, I think you've got some pretty good job protection there. There's lots of things to do with Congress. You're going to be there the rest of your life.
Well, one thing's for sure, there's never going to be a lack of something for me to do. And as we know how much I enjoy talking, I have lots of things to talk about now.
Commander, he did a great job. He was well-spoken today. He could say those tough things that I don't even want to try.
I don't even try them either. You know, I'll leave that to Shane.
Shane, thanks for joining us today. It was a pleasure having you on, and keep up the great work for us.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Commander, we got to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk about women and minority veterans and some of those issues that are affecting more and more women who have served in the military. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. My co-host today has been our National DAV Commander, Butch Whitehead, and a lot of his staff from the national office in Washington, D.C. And coming up, we're going to talk about women and minority veterans. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Herkey.
President's Day, also known as Washington's Birthday, is the United States federal holiday that we celebrate each year. We celebrate in honor of President George Washington, our country's first president. George Washington was also the Commander-in-Chief of the Continental Army during the Revolutionary War. He was a compassionate military leader whose courage and determination inspired his troops. His refusal to quit or give up made the difference between victory and defeat on more than one occasion. General Washington was devoted to the well-being of his troops. His convictions and his hope for a free nation empowered him to influence those around him in a powerful way. He not only voiced his influence, he lived it. And he exemplified it through his actions with purpose, passion, and bravery. As with Memorial Day and Veterans Day, President's Day allows us another opportunity to honor our country's veterans. On President's Day, we pay tribute to the brave and audacious Commander-in-Chief George Washington and celebrate all U.S. presidents, past and present.
Thank you, Commissioner Herkey. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. As I said, in this segment, we're going to talk about women and minority veterans. And Commander, in my day when I was in Vietnam, you couldn't even see women over there. And the only ones who were there were nurses and those type of things. And, of course, the last 10 years, more and more women are signing up and serving in the military. And it's a big part of what's happening today, is it not?
It is. I mean, that's one of the highest percentages of our enlistments right now is the female and minority veterans joining the military. So it's a great thing that the DAV saw this early on, and we're trying to get ahead of this as these female and minority veterans are coming out and getting into the VA system that the VA is ready for it.
And we're going to talk about that a little bit with Director Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Hospital later in the show. But joining us now is Ashley Burns. From your office in Washington, D.C., and we're going to talk about women and minority veterans. Ashley, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It is good to be among Midwesterners.
Well, it's great to have you on, Ashley. Ashley, as an old Vietnam veteran and someone, I'm a patient at the Minneapolis VA Healthcare Center, seems like that the older VA medical centers were set up for men because it was mostly men that served in the military, and they're having to scramble and deal with the influx of women veterans. How's that going around the country, and how are the lady veterans being treated?
So that is a really good question, and it's kind of a big answer because it's the fact is that it's not the same across the country, and that's one of the issues that we're facing is that in some pockets of the VA it's going really well, in some pockets not so well. You know, overall, what we're seeing is a rather large problem and a pretty unique problem within VA about sexual harassment and assault. You know, we don't often hear about people going into the private healthcare sector and being harassed. So it's kind of a unique issue. But according to VA's own reports, about 1 in 4 women veterans actually experiences some type of sexual assault or harassment within VA. And that comes down to a couple of different things. First, the culture, the environment that unfortunately largely translates from DOD, which of course right now is struggling with its own issues there. Veterans not being held accountable for their actions, which could be bystanders not reporting incidents that they see, a lack of accountability within reporting structures, or not handling it correctly at the local facility level. Not having a comprehensive and department-wide VA policy in place to address those issues or leadership-driven commitment to implement them. And even, you know, talking about physical layouts of certain spaces, I think you kind of alluded to that, in just making sure that women have their own spaces to feel safe and comfortable when they come for their care. And the bottom line is that harassment in any form, we know it is a barrier for veterans to receive their care. If they don't feel comfortable, if they don't feel safe, they're not going to come there and get the care that they need. So we really need to change that focus and make sure we're drilling down on changing that culture.
And Ashley, we see at the Minneapolis VA Medical Center that if the women veterans are the least bit uncomfortable, a volunteer will meet them at the door and escort them to the women's clinic, which is inside the main building right now. And Commander, They're starting construction on a whole new women's clinic here in Minneapolis.
Yeah, I'm extremely excited about that, Tom, here locally in Minnesota that, you know, as Ashley highlighted, you know, getting their own space for these female veterans. And Minnesota, we're taking that lead. And this spring when they break the ground and having the female veterans clinic for them, I think it's a huge win for the VA, but also more importantly for our female veterans.
So, Ashley, are there things that you're doing at the national level with the DAV to help take care of this issue across the country?
Yeah, absolutely. And I am really glad to hear that that's great news about the Minnesota VA. I'm very happy to hear that. And I think it's a great footprint or a great blueprint for other VA facilities to follow. You know, we have brought this issue directly to the Biden administration, both in meetings before the inauguration and since. And Commander Whitehead has actually been a fantastic and very vocal advocate, a leading voice in calling for an end to harassment within VA, especially as we're looking towards more facilities starting to open up to veterans as more people become vaccinated. We want to make sure that this is a message that we're getting across to people. You know, DAV has helped to highlight VA's White Ribbon campaign, kind of opening that dialogue about respectful interactions among veterans, because we are the ones that use those facilities, each and every one of us, and we are all responsible for having that respect for one another. You know, we've been part of supporting and testifying before Congress for different legislation, like the Deborah Sampson Act, which just passed as part of a veterans omnibus bill back in December, which actually requires the Secretary of VA to establish a policy of anti-harassment and anti-sexual assault at VA. And of course, we'll continue to work with our partners in Congress, the Congressional Women Veterans Task Force, to ensure that the Deborah Sampson Act and those provisions are implemented as we move forward. And I think most notably, you may know this, Commander, I know you know, at the end of 2020, DAV was the first veterans group to call for the resignation or removal of former VA Secretary Robert Wilkie for a pretty serious mishandling of a 2019 sexual assault claim at the Washington, D.C. VA medical facility. And, you know, after we did that, it was sort of a domino effect, and other groups and lawmakers started to also call for his removal. And while ultimately he didn't leave office, I think it sends a clear message that we take this very seriously. Making sure the new administration and the newly confirmed VA Secretary, Dennis McDonough, is aware that this needs to be a priority issue.
We're speaking with the National DAV staff from Washington, D.C. on Minnesota Military Radio. Ashley, we've just got about 2 or 3 minutes left, and we were talking about women and minority veterans. Are there racial, ethnic, and gender minorities that are having issues at our VA facilities as well?
Yeah, so as you're probably aware, while the veteran population overall continues to decline, those populations are actually the ones that are growing. And while we have seen a lot of changes and improvements in this increasingly diverse patient cohort, we know that there are some gaps in things like access, usage rates, health outcomes, and things like that. So it's something we need to really be aware of. And it's not just within racial lines. We're also talking about LGBT veterans as well. We know that there are certain health issues that come along with those things. And right now, data collection is a big issue. They're not collecting enough data. VA does not have a great estimate on how many LGBT veterans there are in the system right now, because they don't ask the question. And many LGBT veterans may not be comfortable offering that information. So that's an area that we need to continue to focus on, collecting good data on how many patients you have, and being able to give VA providers a way to incorporate that into veterans' health records so they can appropriately address issues that may be related to those specific populations.
So, Ashley, we've only got about a minute left, but how do we get to a place where the VA is addressing the unique needs of these veteran populations and achieve some kind of cultural transformation where everybody's treated fairly?
Yeah, so a couple of the things that we're asking for the VA to do, we're looking, as I mentioned, that prioritization of data collection so we can identify health trends, access issues, and disparities, and look for ways that we can address them. We want the VA to review their programs and methods of how they deliver services to those underrepresented and underserved veteran populations to make sure that they're adequately meeting their needs, and to investigate cultural differences that may be creating barriers for those veteran groups, and look at ways that we can develop improvements in outreach to minority and at-risk or underserved groups as well.
Ashley, I'm afraid we've got a lot of work to do to get to a level playing field there, but keep up the great work, and thanks for joining us today on Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you so much.
Commander, coming up, we're going to talk to another one of your folks from Washington, D.C. about veterans' mental health and suicide prevention. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking today with a lot of members from the National Office of the Disabled American Veterans And my co-host today has been our National Commander, DAV National Commander, Butch Whitehead. And Butch, in this segment, we want to talk about veterans, mental health, and suicide prevention. Seems like we've been talking about this for years, but we always have to keep going back after it, don't we?
It is. It's something that's been, you know, a top priority for a while, and it seems to be we're not making enough ground up, you know, so it's something that we keep bringing back every year, and we keep got to get after this even harder now.
And you've got another one of your partners from the Washington office on the phone. Would you like to introduce him?
Well, Markey's been part of our team, and Markey and I actually were part of the last administration's the Prevents team, and it was a great program to be part of. I'm an ambassador for the Prevents team, where Markey and I were part of that.
Markey Bearfield. Markey, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
And thank you, and it's a pleasure to be here this afternoon.
Sir, these are two issues that are very, very important for our veterans, but let's start out with mental health care services. Have there been some improvements? Are we making any positive motion on that within the VA?
VA currently is serving about 1.8 million veterans, which is about 29% of their total enrolled patients. And for the upcoming fiscal year, they have requested over $10 billion for their mental health service programs.
So I'm sure you're monitoring that and watching how they want to spend it. And do you think we're doing that effectively enough to make an impact for our veterans?
Yes. They are also developing a guidance for their emergency department. This particular program is called the Safety Planning for Emergency Departments, or the SPED program. This is to ensure that veterans who present to VA medical facilities in mental health crisis, that they receive safety planning prior to their discharge and receive follow-up contact post-discharge to encourage them to seek outpatient treatment associated for their mental health and suicidal problems.
So, Markey, we have to keep working on that, but the second item is to find a way to reduce veteran suicide. And, Markey, I think you know I'm a Vietnam veteran, and a lot of my fellow Vietnam veterans are starting to show up on those lists, and it's disturbing. But this goes across our current veterans, the commander's generation, some of the Vietnam veterans and older. Can you tell us, give us an update, what's going on to help reduce veteran suicides?
To help reduce veteran suicides, as you know, 14 of the 20 veterans that die every year, it's noted that they have not received treatment at the VA medical centers. So the VA is trying to do better with outreach to make sure that those 14 that are committing suicide every year, they find new ways to reach out to them to be able to bring them in to receive treatment from their local VA medical centers.
And Commander, I've read some of the information that I got for today's interviews, and not surprisingly, our veterans have a tendency to use firearms if they're going to do this, where the rest of the population might use something else, and they might not be very good at their practices for handling medications or firearms. Is there a way to help that?
You know, I think right now what the VA is trying to do is really get after the and identify some of the triggers and stuff like that and get out in front of it a little better to help identify those that are at risk and get them in the program a little sooner to help maybe prevent some of that stuff from going on, Tom.
And once again, if you see a change in your veteran, the best thing to do is ask what's going on.
Yep.
Are you thinking about this? Can we help you? And get them to the VA, because if you get them to the VA hospital, they know how to help.
Absolutely. You know, you got to be able to ask that tough question. You know, are you doing okay? And just not assume them.
Markey, I understand that there's a peer support specialist program. Can you explain that to me? And is that helpful?
Yes. The peer support specialist hotline. They help veterans that are transitioning and welcoming them into the VA medical centers. And a lot of the peer support specialists have been or are veterans already, and they can help these new veterans come in and feel adjusted and get them used to being in the medical center. And they are a representation of the subpopulations that are unique to the VA. Whether they're Blacks, Hispanics, Native Americans, women and other special groups that need or require attention, require a little more special attention as they adjust to coming into the VA.
So, Marquis, is this a matter of making sure the veterans and their families know that there's help available and to reach out, and then the DAV can help send them to the appropriate resources?
That's correct. We want veterans and their families to know that the VA is the first place that we would recommend them to go to when it comes down to mental health or suicide crisis. The VA specializes and is the leader in mental health care for our veterans. So, yes, we would definitely recommend them to go there. And then in times of crisis, there's also the VA crisis line number, which is 1-800-273-6255, and press option 1 to be connected to someone that specializes in dealing with and talking to veterans.
Marquis, I want to thank you for joining us today, and I hope your work to help with veterans' mental health and preventing suicide is wonderfully successful, because the better work you do, the more veterans we can save. So good luck, sir, and thanks for joining us today.
And thank you very much. And with an ambassador like Commander Whitehead, there's nothing that we can't accomplish.
Thank you, Marquis. That was Marquis Bearfield, one of your staff out at Washington, D.C., and joining us now is Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. And Director Kelly, we've got a special guest with us today, a co-host. It's our DAV National Commander, Butch Whitehead. I think the two of you know each other.
Well, I'm really happy to be able to join this show with Stephan Whitehead. I have a tremendous amount of respect for him and for the work that he's done with the DAV, and he's even part of our Consumer Advisory Board here at the hospital. So I'm really happy to share some time with him.
Absolutely, Director. And I mean, it's an honor to be part of your CAB board as well, and because the work you're doing over there, it's great partnership that we have.
Yeah.
Director, you're on the show every 4 weeks or so, and I'm just wondering, it's February, but are there any projects coming up at the hospital this year?
Oh, gosh. You know, Tom, we've always got projects going on. So the most, maybe the one I'd like to highlight would be Women's Health Clinic that we're going to break ground on when the ground thaws in Minnesota. So I'm hoping that's before June. But when the ground thaws, we are going to put a shovel in the ground, and we are going to start constructing a brand-new Women's Health Clinic. It's going to be right alongside our current Building 70, right by Veterans Drive. The circle, you look to your left, you're going to see we will be building a brand-new Women's Health Clinic.
And, Director, there's more and more women serving in the military and have been for a decade or more. So I know you've done a lot of things to remodel the women's clinic and to try to accommodate them, but this is pretty exciting, and the lady veterans have to be revved up about this.
Well, you know, you are absolutely right that there are more women veterans serving and more women veterans getting their health care over here at the hospital. And you know, it's our job to provide an environment that they're comfortable receiving their care, and it's the optimal care. Sometimes, you know, integrating care, we've had some struggles, and I know some of the women veterans have felt uncomfortable with that. So this women's health clinic will be connected to the hospital so they can get some services through there, but it'll have a separate entrance. It'll be exclusively for women veterans. I think it's going to be a big improvement.
Very good, sir. Director, we've been talking about this for about a year, but that pandemic is still here. I know you're administering vaccines, where veterans are waiting to get a letter so that they know when it's their turn. How's that going, sir?
Tom, have you gotten your letter yet?
I got a personal letter. I checked in with my primary care doctor at the VA on Tuesday for a scheduled meeting, and she gave me orders to call and make an appointment, and I said, yes, ma'am, and I did. So in March, I'll be out to see you a couple of times, and I wasn't going to I just said, yes, ma'am, I'm on it.
Well, we have, you know, we started vaccinating veterans on the 15th of December. We were the first site in Minnesota to get the COVID vaccine, and so we started on the 15th of December. We've done about 23,000 vaccinations so far. We have started doing vaccines in our community-based outpatient clinics. And so, for example, this weekend, we are going to be at Shakopee covering Minnesota veterans and hope to do about 800 per day. And we've been at Maplewood. We've been at Northwest Metro. We're going up to Twin Ports and Ely later in about a month. that we are doing vaccine clinic every day in the medical center, second floor of the flag atrium, and we're doing about 800 to 1,000 every day right there.
Very good, sir. Now, I know that the your VA medical center there has been on kind of a restricted status. I think it was probably to keep the National DAV commander out of there. But are you going to be moving back to the pre-COVID care with the surgery and face-to-face visits? Are things going to loosen up, Director?
Well, you know, Tom, it is starting to feel more like normal here. But I will say we are still doing screening. We're still doing mask wearing. We're still doing social distancing. We are still doing all of those things that need to be done because the COVID is still real. It's still, we still have COVID inpatients here in our hospital. You know, the you've heard about the variants, you know, the other strains. So we're going to keep doing all that stuff, but we are getting more and more veterans in the hospital, back to more surgeries, back to more face-to-face care. So yes, more normal, but even normal is going to look a little bit different for the next many months.
Director, we just got a few seconds left, but for our veterans that are still waiting for notification, what you've told me in the past is you'll send a letter, and they can call in and schedule an appointment. Is that still the way it's supposed to work?
Tom, I'm going to tell you two things. One, if you're over 76 years old, and I know that doesn't include you, people are free to call the call center. They can do that now. Otherwise, and this is still remains true, people will get letters, they'll get a text, they'll get a phone call when it's their turn. But if you're over 76, you can call in.
Director, thanks for joining us today. That was
my
Director
pleasure,
Pat.
Tom, thank you.
That was Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System. And Commander, appreciate you coming
Absolutely.
To the show and look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you, Tom. Thanks for having me.
We're just about out of time. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week from the National DAV Office, Joy Elam, Shane Learman, Ashley Byrne, Marquis Bearfield, Director Pat Kelly from the Minneapolis VA Healthcare System, my co-hosts are DAV National Commander Bush Whitehead, Commissioner Larry Herkey from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Sean Mankey. Please join us next week as we meet the team behind Minnesota's Veteran Centers and get an update from our Red Bull soldiers. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at Minnesota Military Radio. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
Minnesota Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.